Proverbs chapter 22. We've dealt with values and certain values that you should ingrain in your children. And now I want to answer the question of how you do that. And so we're going to start with this verse, pretty key verse, especially for you parents. Look at Proverbs chapter 22. It should be a verse you have memorized. A lot of you, I'm sure a lot of you do. Look at verse number 6. Proverbs chapter 22, verse number 6. The Bible says there, look at, train up a child in the way he should go. When he is old, he will not depart from it. So we're going to talk and get into this idea of training, training your child, your children, how important it is. The training is something that is intended to last a lifetime. That's what's important, what you see out of the verse here. And so I want to make a distinction this morning between training and, let's say, punishment or consequences to a deed done wrong. There is a difference. Training is not so much the spankings, but you need both. You need the consequences that are from the lawbreaker or the rule breaker or the desires of mom and dad. There's that punishment there, but there's also training. You need both, and you can't lack one and be heavy on the other. And so it's an important thing. They're not the same. Job says in I'll give it to you. Job chapter 28, verse number 28. This idea of departure. Job 28:28. He says, "Unto man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom." Look at, "and to depart from evil is understanding." So within that training concept, if you will, you're teaching that child to depart from evil because they understand the training that you're giving them. You can't assume your kids know what's right and wrong because they don't. They're born with equipment that is a self-centered equipment. And it's important to note because that training will save them. Write the verse down. I'll give it to you. Proverbs 15, verse 24. "The way of life is above to the wise, that he may depart from hell beneath." So this idea of training and not departing is to keep your child from going to hell. In the end of the day, when children are trained or taught to obey their parents, all right, and to follow somebody in authority, that's a good thing. Now, I know people don't believe that anymore, but it's a good thing because when they are presented with the gospel, they're presented with consequences to their sin. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God, right? And so a child has to understand that. But that training goes hand in hand with them able to grasp the concept of salvation, to grasp the concept of consequences. So it's important. Training is connected with the idea of conditioning. An athlete is trained and they train and they train and it's conditioning. I was watching a thing on Patrick Mahomes last year, I think it was. All the training that he does, he's got a trainer. He runs around with one of these big heavy balls and makes all these cuts. And what they did was they took him in a game setting and they put him in motion in the game. And then all the moves that he makes in a game, he practices those in training and builds up those core ligaments and tendons to make the moves he does in the game and what he does. You know what that is? That's just training. And that training, he gets trained and trained and trained. So when it comes time, he's got to make a crazy move. And he throws the ball from all different angles and all different concepts. He's able to do that. That's training. And parents forget to do that. He said, train up a child the way he should go. And it's not necessarily, we're not talking about the punishment. We're talking about training. I'll give you an example. I watched my mom many a times. She'd have babies that would bite her. 6 months, 8 months old baby, and she either slapped that kid on the leg or pulled her hair. Well, that's mean. The kid's biting her. So yeah, she had to stop that. She had to condition that idea or that training into that child so that child would not do that. It was associated with those things. And so as we look at, I'll give you Proverbs chapter 3 on this idea of departure. Proverbs chapter 3, verse number 7. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord. Look at and depart from evil. If you run the word depart in the book of Proverbs, I think there's almost 30 references there. And they're all departing from things, and training is involved in all those things. And so it has to be taught. Training is to teach a behavior or guide or help develop self-control. That's what training is. And that's the same things you have to develop in your children. You have to help them understand those things. Look in Proverbs. Go to Proverbs chapter 19. Here's what Solomon said about it in Proverbs chapter 19, this thought or idea of training and bringing a child up. Look at Proverbs chapter 19. Look at verse number 18. This has to do with the time element. Verse number 18, chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. You can't start disciplining a child or training a child at 16 years old. You're way behind it. It's not going to happen. Matter of fact, when a child gets to be 16, 17, and 18, they've pretty much made up their mind what they're going to do. Now, they may still be under the auspices of mom and dad or wherever they're at, you know, all those kind of things. But anymore, it's almost 14, 13, 14 anymore is where things are at. But he talks about this idea, chasing thy son while there is hope. And notice the second part of that, let not thy soul spare for his crying. Crying is a... think about crying. Crying is the only way a child can let you know they have needs. A baby, right? A baby cries when it has a dirty diaper. A baby will cry when it's hungry. A baby will cry when it needs attention. And so crying is, it's a legitimate way for a child to communicate with us. But crying, as you watch it as a parent, right? I know you folks that have been parents and your kids are old and gone. Crying in order to manipulate the parents into a constant servitude should never be rewarded. Okay? So what I mean by that is this. Children, they'll learn at a certain age. Sometimes it's 4 months. Maybe it's 6 months. It's 8 months. But a child will learn, if I cry, I get stuff. So they'll cry. My wife would go in and check. Kid's crying. Diaper's good. Just got fed. Got a binky, got a blanket, it's warm. It's crying because it wants attention. It wants something it's almost like, I forget who it was. I don't know if it's one of my siblings, maybe. It could have been my dad. Someone was hurting pretty bad. That was my dad. My dad, after his chainsaw accident, my mom gave him a bell. And every time he needed something, he'd ring the bell. What do you need? Yeah. What do you need? That's what that crying is with a baby. And parents, listen, especially if you're going to be young parents, you have to discern between what is legitimate and what is not. Because if you don't, what you'll do is you'll develop in that kid that idea, that self-centeredness, and that this will produce a self-centered child, an entitled child, and eventually they become adults. And that's the problem. It's a battle of wills. You will always, and you might have an exception to the rule if one of your kids, but you'll always have a place and a time where here's you with your will and here's your children with their will, and you're going to have a meeting. And that child will kick and scream and yell to get their way. And here's the problem with the parent is a lot of times they can't handle it and they give into that. You give into that. Once you give into that, the child has now won. The child has set precedent. The child knows I can control this parent by screaming and kicking. You see it all the time. And what's that verse tell us? Chasten thy son while there is hope. Look at, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. It's hard. It is, because you're like, oh, the teeny tiny little baby that's crying. Like, no, that kid's using you, man. It's manipulating you. You know why a child is all about self-gratification? That's their world. A child knows nothing of duty or responsibility. It doesn't know any of those. All it knows is I want stuff. And it's self-serving. That's what a child is. Adults are the same way, but we're better at hiding it. We mask it all the time, right? That's how that thing works. When a child is crying in order to manipulate you, you need to make that situation counterproductive for the child. In other words, let the kid cry. Oh, that's terrible. Well, if a child's needs are met, and you know, what you'll find is, and we watch this with our kids, right, is, all right, so they cry 8 minutes and then they stop. Because it's like, I'm not getting anything out of this, right? I'm crying, I'm doing my best, I'm screaming and kicking, and nobody's coming. And then after a while, they don't react to that. They don't do that because they realize you're not going to answer to that call. A mother will always go check, make sure everything is in order, everything is fine, and you should. I'm not saying you stick your kid in a corner. There are advocates out there that they let the kid cry for hours and don't even check on him. Just leave him alone. And, you know, that's the scary side of things. We had neighbors back in the day, the next to us, and they adopted a little baby from China. And they had to actually fly over to get the baby. When they went into that orphanage where those babies were at, it was totally quiet. And I'm like, wow. I said, they that well behaved? He said, no. He said, they cried so much that no one comes to them, so they don't even cry at all. And the girl they adopted, she was like that for the first 6 months. She didn't figure why cry because nothing ever happens. They didn't care for it. I'm not saying to that extreme either. What I'm saying is you have to look at those things and be careful because it is going to be a test of wills. It's a test of authority. A child wants to know, am I the boss or are you the boss? I mean, you young people, think about it this way. You reap what you sow. If you're going to be rebellious and you're going to be this way, what do you think is going to happen when you have children of your own? Listen, if you're 14, 15, 16, 17, all the way up to 30, when you have children, you want children that listen. It could be that so much important for their life. Like, don't move, and a car's going by, right? And the kid doesn't listen, and there you go. There's all kinds of situations, stuff like that happen. And so it's a test of authority. There will come that time. I remember with Carrie Ann, and probably 8 or 9 months old, and she was crying and kicking and mad, and she was like mean, you know, kind of a thing. And she doesn't seem to be mean anymore today. She's over in the back. I knew I could bring her. Otherwise, I'll use John because he's not here either. Either I can pick any child to tell. We had a come to Jesus meeting, me and Carrie Ann, one night. She might have been 8 or 9 months old, and she was fighting it, and I was holding her because we're trying to get her ready to go to bed and all that kind of stuff. And you'll see a kid, they arch their back, and they go like this. They're trying to get out of your arms, like, you're not telling me what to do. And I'm like, oh, I was squeezing her just tight enough that she couldn't wiggle. I was like, we could do this for hours, and I'll do it for hours if I have to, because I'm going to win. Oh, what kind of father are you? All you care about is winning. No, you're looking at this all wrong. She had to know in my house, my rules. Oh, in my house, I'm the boss. Why am I the boss? Because God put me there. Not because I want it. I'd rather say, honey, why don't you take care of the kids, and you do that, and I'm going to go out and play baseball. I'll go do something else. No, it falls on me. Falls on you dads, you men in here, if you have children, listen, your wife is more emotionally attached to that child and has a very soft heart toward the child. I understand that. But you, on the other hand, have to look at it logistically. You have to look at it logically as a man and go, I've got to watch out for that because that's something I'm looking for. You're looking for that time where that child is going to test the authority of who's the boss here. Everyone's happiness is at stake if you don't. You know, when you see a woman who's worn out because her kids are terrible and there's no discipline, there's no training, there's none of those things involved, and she's worn out at the end of the day because she has to do everything. That's not right. And so you've set a course for a child to become rebellious and stubborn and all these things as a little kid, and that thing, they grow up and become adults. The child's will, that's what we're going to talk about for a few minutes here. They will come at you once or twice. There'll be a couple times every child's going to test their will against you. And it's going to be, you're going to see those things. I'll give you a Bible on it. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 21. I'm noticing with Lincoln, well, Lincoln just she does these hand motions. I don't know what they are, but he's trained. He doesn't. She doesn't even have to speak. She does hand motions. I was getting there. It's in my notes. I've got pictures too, if anybody wants to see those. See me after service. And she does this. You're out of here. look at Deuteronomy chapter 21. Look at verse number 18. Look, if a man have a stubborn and rebellious son, well, how did he get to this position? Which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him, will not hearken unto him. Then shall his father and his mother lay hold of him and bring him out unto the elders of the city and unto the gate place, and they shall say unto the elders of the city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. Being a glutton and a drunkard are connected with being stubborn and rebellious. The combination is deadly. And what I mean by that is the combination is deadly on you being a successful individual in society or spiritually speaking. So there's a lot involved here. So, and he's talking about a man. He's talking about a young man. You want to see what the Bible, look in Proverbs chapter 7. Go back to Proverbs chapter 7. That was a boy, a man. And what happens is if you give those things over to your children, allow those things to come through your children, they go from a child to an adult, and they're no different. Matter of fact, they're worse. You want to see how it plays out for a young lady? You want to see how it plays out for a little girl if she's going to be that way? Look at Proverbs chapter 7. Proverbs chapter 7. Look at verse number 1. My son, keep my words and lay up my commandments with thee. Keep my commandments and live. See that? You do what he's asked, you'll live. And my law is the apple of thy eye. Bind them upon thy fingers, write them upon the table of thine heart. Say unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinswoman, that they may keep thee from the strange woman, from the stranger which flattereth with her words. For at the window of my house I looked through my casement, and behold, among the simple ones I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding. And he's passing through the streets under her corner, and he went the way to her house. Look at verse number 9. In the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night, and behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot, and subtle of heart. It's a young lady who's not, she's not the way she's supposed to be. Look at verse 11. Where does this come from? She is loud and stubborn. See, there's stuff. Her feet abide not in her house. What is that? That's a picture of what happens to a woman who is given to be stubborn and rebellious. And she ends up in this condition. The young man is a drunkard. He's not given to work. A little sleep, a little slumber, a folding in the hands of sleep. So shall thy poverty come. Both of these, the picture of both of these, the boy and the girl, the man and the woman, the both picture of what you see what happens to someone who is rebellious. That is something as a parent you're supposed to train out of the child. People say, well, we talk about, it's gotten to a place. It's stubbornness. You cannot let it stand because both parties will suffer in the end, whether it's a boy or a girl. It's like promising a treat if they don't throw a blow a gasket in a grocery store. I've seen it a dozen times. A child gets to a place where they want something. You go to a grocery store. The reason why they put all the candy by the checkout is they know that child will look at that candy and want it, and they'll throw a fit. And the parent, you know what the parent does? They cave. That's the worst thing you can do. The worst thing, a child by nature is an extortionist. They are. A child wants to extort, get something from you, and they find a way to do that. It's extortion. Your job as a Christian set of parents is to stop that. Because that's not how it works. You don't go to God and say, well, Lord, you got to give me this and you got to give me that. I read my Bible this year. God's like, what? That's not how it works at all. Matter of fact, there's laws on the books when you extort something from somebody. It's a law, and you break that law, and you pay the consequences. A child blows the gasket in the grocery store, and the parents get played by the child all the time. I remember Timmy was at the he used to take his animals down to the fair down there in Stowe, and I remember seeing this kid. At the fair they always have, the elephant ears and all the different vendors are there, and they're selling their stuff. They got the coated peanuts, and they got the fresh squeezed lemonade. I don't even know if that's lemonade, but it's really sugary. It's good stuff. They got all that stuff down there, and I'm watching this kid, and he is throwing a fit. There must have been 30 people around him. He's throwing a fit. And finally, the parents just, there you go. Just be quiet. That kid is played. That kid's absolutely, folks, listen, those are the things you don't have to train into the child. They come with the equipment because a child is all about themselves. All about themselves. The rebel wants to control you by causing you to lose your anger. Lose your anger. The Lord, you folks have been saved a while. Does the Lord have to yell at you and scream and kick at you to try to get you to do something or try to get you to do the right thing? You know what the Bible refers it to as? A still, small voice. When the child's got you so infuriated that you're the one yelling, they win. Because training, isn't this idea of yelling and screaming. When you're training your child, it is tell them specifically the task you want them to do and how you want them to do it. All right, you may even have to show them how to do it, all those sort of things, but it should be done in a calm voice. You can't lose that. And I was raised in a house, my dad, he would work hard, and he wasn't a saved man at the time when I was a kid, but he still, I appreciate the fact they disciplined us, and they had to, I get it, and I'm grateful for that discipline, I'm grateful for those training, and I'm grateful for the punishment. It kept me out of probably a lot of trouble in life. But he was lost, and there were times where Dad would discipline or correct us, and he was mad. It was almost like he comes home from a hard day at work, and now he's got to beat up a bunch of kids. And so did we cause him to be that way? I think we own some of that, right, as a child. But you parents, listen, especially you guys, I got a note here. Let me see if I can find it. I got page after page after page. Hang with me. We're almost there. Oh, here we go. I'm going to give you the key, all right? The parents must assume that part of the child's moral duty that isn't developed yet. Not a policeman, but more like the Holy Spirit of God. When it comes to training, especially for dads, you don't want to approach it from the policeman, like I'm hiding in the bushes and I caught him, and now they're going to pay dear. That's where a policeman, he hides behind the embankment on the bridge and he takes his little gun and shoots you. And he's hiding, and then I got you doing 30 miles over the speed limit. And here's a ticket on it. You want to train like the Holy Spirit trains you. You ever think about that relationship and how he does it? When I think of how the Holy Spirit trains and how he deals, even just with me, apart from all of you, he doesn't raise his voice. There's a manner in which he puts things across. I was talking to Who was it the other day? Oh, Daniel, our floor guy. He was talking about, he's a saved guy. He's talking about how his wife and his kids are all sick. And I said, yeah, that's what you got to do. You got to take care of the fam and do that sort of thing. And it's a matter of being compassionate and understanding. Kids a lot of times forget that we were little ourselves. If you're 16 in here, I was 16 at one point. And I know exactly what that's like. I understand where you're coming from. But there's a better path, right? There's a better path than just leaving. The Bible talks about in the book of Proverbs, a child left to himself brings his mother shame. You know, it's the idea of, and we'll look at it in a minute, about this idea of children who are, they say, he's strong-willed. That child who is rebellious and tries to control you, trying to get you to lose your temper, lose your anger. And they'll say he's strong-willed. Unfortunately, he's strong-willed because you didn't break him. He broke you. Children will train parents. Children will train parents. They there is the element in every one of you to fight to live. You will hang on as long as you can. You will fight as hard as you can to live. It's the human condition because God put that in there. If people didn't care about it, like, oh, they died or so-and-so. No, you fight for your life. That's a natural. That's the carnal man. He fights for everything. That's all a child knows. It's ingrained in his DNA to be self-gratifying, self-sustained, self-centered. That's a child. And the rod is what corrects that. And so it's not a matter of being strong-willed. That's just the condition of children. A young child is not affected by peer pressure. I've never seen a six-month-old go, everybody else got one, Mom. No, they're not even talking at 6 months. They don't have peer pressure. They don't care about embarrassment. They poop their pants. You know that, right? A little child is not embarrassed about what they did. They're the one throwing the temper tantrum, and they don't care what people think. You know what they care about? I want to get what I want. I want the candy bar at the checkout, and it's going to be a Milky Way because I like caramel. A child is not affected even by rejection. If I get what I want, I don't care if you like me, don't like me, none of that. That's what a child does. A child's life is one of unlimited, unconstrained self-indulgence. I'll read that again. A child's life is one of unlimited, unconstrained self-indulgence. They just get what they want. That's what they're after. That is probably the telltale or the revelation of looking at children is, my mom used to say this all the time. She taught Sunday school for 25 years. She taught the little ones. You know what she'd tell those kids as soon as they can understand? You're a sinner. You're all sinners. John wrote a eulogy for his grandmother. And he said, he was in her Sunday school class. And he said in that eulogy, he said, Grandma always reminded us that we were little sinners. Little wicked sinners. She was right. She was right. She's still right. All a bunch of little sinners. The problem is, and here's the problem for the Christian couple. This is the problem for the Christian home. The problem is waiting for the child's understanding to develop so that you can correct bad behavior. There is a time where, you know, this idea when you go to punishment or consequences of doing something wrong, you're not really doing that until they have the idea of what they're doing is wrong. There is a developmental part in a child. I'll give you an example. It's kind of cute when a three-month-old can reach over and grab something you're eating and then grab and eat, and you're like, that's so funny. It's not funny when a three-year-old grabs your food. It might be funny when a three-year-old runs up and he goes, Grandpa, and Grandpa's talking to somebody else, and he wants to tell Grandpa what he's got going on because it's all about his world. That's kind of neat because a three-year-old just learning to talk. I think Hazel was saying, what was the word she was saying? Unbelievable. She was saying unbelievable, and I don't know if it was Josh or Caleb. She just said unbelievable. I said, well, yeah, she says it a lot. Well, it's cute. But at 9 years old, for her to interrupt the conversation I'm having with another adult? No, it's, excuse me, can I? No. So there is a, and it's different for each child. I'm not one of these guys, well, at two, it's this, and four, it's that. But there is a developmental aspect of a child coming through, and you've got to kind of figure that out so you can correct bad behavior. What you will see is selfishness and meanness of spirit that grow up behind a wall of undeveloped understanding. I tried to write all this down because it's coming to me. I'm writing it down. I'm like, that's pretty good. I'll put that there. But they have an undeveloped understanding. What's the New Testament admonition that Paul gives? Fathers, be not what? Against your children. Bitter. Right? I think men, you know, men, we don't, what guys in here actually read the instructions? Does anybody read the instructions? I don't. Men, we don't read instructions. We're like, I'll figure it out. If I can't figure it out, I'll throw it away. You know what? So we, as men, we look at those little kids and go, well, they should know that. No, they don't. Kids don't know that. And men, I can't speak to women. I can speak to men. Men just assume he's mad, he's late. Men get to this idea, this thought, they think, well, the kids just know. You get frustrated what happens. You know, my dad would say, oh, I got to show you 100 times how to do this. No, sir, I don't want 100 times. So there is that idea. I'm trying to help you this morning. I'm trying to help you understand. When you're looking at the kid, there's things they don't understand. They will develop. They'll get there. One of those things is, you know, telling my daughter or Jason, I'll tell them, well, you know, the spankings are where we see the kids more from a distance. You know, I can say, oh, I see improvement and this and that. And they're probably like, I beat these kids every day. There's no help. There's no fixing it. It will come. It will come in time. You can't lose. You must win. In this development, in this training of your child, when you understand it is a matter of life and death, and that's really what it is, it's life and death. A baby finds themselves, they possess an ever-increasing natural desire for things. When you look at sin in the garden, the temptation given to Eve, you know, it was pleasant to be desired, something with the eyes, you know, good to be, all those three things that are given there in Genesis chapter number 3, pleasant to the eyes, things good for food, and that something that would make you wise. That's the temptation. The temptation to Eve was not anything spiritual. It was strictly physical things. A child does that. A children learn to manipulate their surroundings. They manipulate them to their own desire or gratification. They will do that. How do I know that's true? I still do that today as an adult. When you say things in a manner that always kind of makes you look better than the other guy, that's the same thing. That's self-gratification. The New Testament would say, esteem others better than yourself. That is so broken by Christians. Christians always think you're better than the other guy. And that's not the case. Paul said you should, even if you are, Paul says you esteem them better than you and what you do. It's hard to teach that to children who have never been trained. If they've never been trained or shown these things, that's how they approach it. This is the human condition at its core. The human condition is for you to survive, for you to prolong your days, for you to live as much as you can and have as much. That's the human condition. I mean, a kid does not come out of the womb and in a year or two coming out and say, Mommy, I'm so thankful for the dinner you made. No, they have to be taught that. You will never find a child that has not been taught and left to themselves that will tell you thank you, because they're not. they figure they have it coming. That's what they, that's how they are. There's nothing wrong with that because there is a development curve. There is an understanding curve. And that's where, as parents, as you approach these things and you pray about these things and you observe those things, there were times with my own kids, at least the first two, that I would look at things and I'd see something and say, Lord, what am I supposed to do something here? Leave it alone, do something. And I would plead to the Lord and say, Lord, you know, show me what I need to do here. And he would impress upon my heart to do this or impress upon my heart to do that. Because I was in, you know, people say, well, you get these kids, you have children, but there's no book that goes with it. Well, right here, it's book, all kind of things. An infant's world is no bigger than their needs. No bigger than this. They're incapable of considering someone else's needs. Who in here has seen a two-year-old come up to their mother and say, Mom, Mommy, you look so tired. Why don't you take a nap? You ever see a two-year-old do that? No way. Mom could, bloodshot eyes, hair's a wreck, you know, she's got food all over it. And the cow says, I have a lot of eggs with that too. Give me that, give me that. they don't think about others. You know, the acronym of JOY, Jesus, others, and yourself. Not for a child, not for an infant. It's me, myself, and I. There is nothing more than that. The infant is only acting on what God has instilled or placed inside that child. That's the natural man. They are governed by their natural impulses. They are governed by their natural desires and needs. And so that's what they go after. Look at, go to Psalms. Go to Psalms chapter 58. Psalms chapter 58, look at verse number 1. Do ye indeed speak righteousness, O congregation? Do ye judge uprightly, O ye sons of men? Ye in heart, ye work wickedness, ye weigh the violence, excuse me, of your hands in the earth. The wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. So he's talking about here, notice, coming out of the womb. Children are innocent. They're beautiful, but according to the verse, they go estranged from the womb. As soon as they're born, they're speaking lies. Their poison is like the poison of a serpent. They are like the deaf adder that stoppeth your ear. What occurs is a child left to himself without any training, they resort to these things that David's talking about here in the psalm, and they get to a place where all it is no good. There's a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. That's someone left to themselves. A child cannot raise themselves. If they are left to themselves, this is what you get. You get these problems. And so as soon as they be born, as soon as they come out. So when does training begin? Right away. I don't recall anything in the first 3 or 4 months, you know, outside of maybe biting or that's about it. You know, it gets a little different when they start to crawl and they get mobile, right? A child can, you know, so in our house, you know, do you child-proof the house or house-proof the child? You know, Jonathan, I think he might have been 12. We had a wood-burning stove in our house. Well, he was taught about the oven thing, right? Don't touch the oven. Don't touch the cooktop. It's hot, you know. But here at 12, our wood-burning stove has a glass frame or glass window you can see inside, so you can at least watch the fire burn there. And it runs about 900 degrees, that piece of glass. Well, I come home, it's like, there's a fingerprint on the glass. What? And then there's a big bandage on John's finger. You're 12. There's a fire in there. Well, you can't train stupid, can you? I said, what does it matter? She can't believe you did that. And I think we cleaned the glass pretty good, but it was always, I could tell you where it's at. I could see some of the fingerprinting on there. It never went away. Yeah. So they're born, those infants, those babies. There's no knowledge of sin at this point. God doesn't impute sin unto them, the Bible tells us in the New Testament. There's no knowledge. There's no intellect. There's no moral maturity. A child has no moral maturity at all. They're clueless on those things. They cannot say no to their natural appetites. When you get born again, the Holy Spirit takes up residence, and then we're told not to be servants of sin. We're supposed to we're supposed to say no to those things, right? And as a full-grown individual, as adults with an intellect and the ability to think and read Scripture and understand the Bible, you and I still struggle against sin. A child has, there's no governor, right? There's nothing there to stop that child from going after their natural appetites. Their self-centeredness is one that is innocent. You know, it's okay for a baby or a 1 or 2 or 3 year old to be self-centered. That's how God intended. God made them that way. Now, when they get to be 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, all the way all the rest of life, that's not the proper attitude. That's not God's design or his plan. God's plan was for them to be self-centered. They had to be self-centered so that they might live. When they're hungry, they cry. Why? Somebody has to feed me. It's all about me. But that's self-preservation. That's what God put in children. When God said, multiply, replenish the earth, I had a meeting, like a Skype meeting on Thursday with my nephew and his fiance, and we're talking about these things, about marriages and stuff like that. And I said, well, here's the goal, multiply, replenish the earth. The drive there is to live. The drive is there to naturally to reproduce. That's why we talk about the lifestyles of the Sodomites and the lifestyle of those sort of people. That's not a lifestyle. It's a death style for the human race. I mean, if everybody was gay, we would quit producing children. And right now, we're losing more people to death than we are coming in on the other side of that spectrum, which is childbirth. I think the average couple now has what? Is it 1 or 1.1 children? When you look at how many are getting born in the United States and then how many are dying, well, we're decreasing in places. That's not good. That's not good at all. Of course, when they abort hundreds of thousands of them all the time, and that's a whole other problem for another day. So training, we'll start down this road and then we'll call it quits this morning. Training should be given calmly with exact detail. When frustrations come, and it will, they must be a calm, you must have a calm demeanor. You don't have to raise your voice. When a child sees those things, training must begin at the time the child transitions from the give me period to the time of responsibility for some of their own needs. In other words, there's a point where a child's thirsty and they can go get their sippy cup. It's over there. Go get it. As opposed to mommy and daddy, go get my sippy cup. No, you got 2 good legs. You go get them. And so as those things transition where a child can and be self-sustaining, that's what you're trying to do. In a secular way or humanitarian way, that's really what you do. The world is trying to accomplish is get your child, by the time they get to 18, 19, and 20, they're able to leave the house. What are they able to do? Get a job, sustain a job, pay their bills, be responsible, keep up their hygiene, all the things that you taught and trained as a kid. Brush your teeth before you go to bed. By the time the kid's old enough, you're able to say, all right, see ya. That's the goal. That's the goal of the world. That's the goal of of the natural man. That's the, you want your children to be productive in society. Now we're going beyond that. We're going to finish out and talk about the spiritual side of things. But as the children transition from that, those periods, you've got to continue to give those things and to grow those things and to train in those things. So we'll start right there next time. All right. Any questions? Anything need repeated?